Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
We join now in studio by Andrew Amwells. He's the head of research at wealth intelligence for firm New World Wealth to give us some feedback there. Andrew, such a pleasure to have you with us in studio, sir. I guess we always speak online, but lovely to interact with you in person.
Yes, great to be here.
Fantastic. My colleague, Bray Eddie, might just ask you to come a little bit closer to the mic, or we'll pull it closer to make sure that you're more audible. So there we go. We'll adjust it shortly. But Andrew, I guess first things first, right? The Africa Wealth Report. Maybe let's just get some context as to how the numbers are collated, where the data is from, and the significance of this particular finding.
There's various sources that we use. We obviously look at all the economic indicators, the income numbers, and then we have a database of high net worth individuals that we track in terms of their city location, and we do wealth estimates for them as well, especially the ones at the top end.
Got you. And maybe let's talk about these individuals. Top of mind, I'm thinking, well, you know, I can drop a few names, you know, the Ruperts, the Dangotes, the James Mwangis of this world. But those are the top very familiar with, but you dig a lot deeper, right, to actually find...
So there are 25 billionaires, US dollar billionaires. So everything we do is in US dollars, so we can compare one country to another in a single currency. And then we look at it in terms of liquid wealth. So that's quite a high bar.
And that's important, right? I think let's emphasize that, because liquid wealth is important. That's how quickly you can actually get the money out and actually use it versus having 15 properties but have to wait 12 months to sell it.
Yes, so it's mainly focused on equities, obviously listed company holdings, equities and ETFs, cash, crypto would come into it now, gold holdings, things that you can cash in quickly. So it would exclude things like... property, and it would exclude, for instance, family businesses, which are quite illiquid and difficult to value. It's quite a high bar, and because of that, we tend to have lower numbers than some of the other vendors.
Okay, got you. Let's talk about the numbers. We know that we're measuring in terms of dollars here, and also taking a look at key metrics in terms of liquid wealth. Where do we find most of Africa's millionaires?
Well, South Africa's actually home to over a third of Africa's millionaires, which about 34%, which is significantly higher than the percentage of GDP that South Africa accounts for, which maybe speaks to the fact that some of the GDP figures in some of the other African countries might not be accurate, but also speaks to the fact that South Africa is really the dominant force, especially when it comes to wealth. It's obviously got very well established luxury residential areas, which isn't the case in many other African countries.
Gotcha.
And I think it's obviously got a lot of, particularly dominant among the sort of run of the mill millionaires, people with over $1 million, about 20 million rand in liquid wealth. South Africa's very dominant in that wealth.
$20 million?
$1 million, so 20 million, about 17 million. Rand.
Okay, this is proper money we're talking about. What is interesting to come out of the report is also where they're located: in Johannesburg, Cape Town, Umhlanga, Cape Winelands, and Pretoria. And I do want us to get into, you know, the mix in terms of where our other peers do fit, especially across the continent. But just coming into, you know, I guess what is the key driver in terms of them being based in South Africa or generating their wealth in South Africa? Those particular metrics, i.e., you know, what the source of income or where the source of income is?
Well, we look at them in terms of where we feel that they're resident and where they're living. So, for instance, I don't really like to mention names, but obviously Elon Musk would not be included because he doesn't live in South Africa.
Makes
but
sense.
He was born here. So we look at people that are resident here. There are some of the South Africans where there are question marks as to where they are really resident. A lot of them have a lot of money through family offices that are domiciled in various locations. So it's quite difficult to actually know where they're resident. And a lot of them have multiple passports. So sometimes there is a tendency, if someone's got a holding in a really big South African company, to say that they're South African, but it's not always the case. For instance, in South Africa, there's 8 billionaires that are resident, but there are an additional 6 that have left South Africa.
Gotcha.
But a lot of those 6 didn't make their money in South Africa. So whether you could say that they really left as billionaires is debatable.
This is huge. And I think this is also mind-blowing, right? Because as I look through the metrics and the numbers, as you say, again, these are dollar millionaires. And of those, we have at least 11,700 who are residents in Johannesburg. And a reminder to my listeners, dollar millionaires, a minimum of 17 million rand, just available in terms of liquid cash and assets. Again, this would, for any South African who might be listening, raise, you know, amazing insight and curiosity, but also bring about a heightened sense of distance of tear, Andrew. And I can imagine that so often when you share much of this information, a lot of people tend to bring in the fold, you know, the just the heightened level of inequality that we have in South Africa. And if these individuals are high profile, you know, do they lead large businesses and maybe contributing to socio-economic and even governance issues in a different way versus, I guess, sharing their wealth?
Well, I think that a lot of the arguments about inequality in South Africa mainly center on the statistic called the Gini coefficient, yes, which is a curve. And we've always kicked back on that because South Africa actually has quite a big middle class and quite a lot of millionaires and not many billionaires. There's a lot of countries that have a lot of billionaires, a lot of centime millionaires with over 100 million US, but they don't have many millionaires and they've got a small middle class. For instance, Russia, India, I'd say that they are far more unequal than South Africa, but
oligarchs as well, because there's a political play in terms of their wealth and power as well in many of those markets. Got you.
Yes. So I would actually argue South Africa is far more equal than those countries, but it is on the Gini coefficient, it tends to score quite poorly.
Got you. And what you're saying there is because of the big middle class that we do have. And you're right, South Africa is also an economy of like two halves of opportunities that might be present and the realities that many South Africans also do live under. Andrew, I'm quite keen, you know, just to zoom out again and maybe go into the continental view, right? So a strong number of South African South Africa is home to at least 34% of the continent's dollar millionaires. But they also happen to be in other markets like Kenya, Egypt, as well as Nigeria, which features on the list. And I'm hoping that maybe you can just take us through some of those metrics around other countries that prove to be quite dominant.
Yes. So South Africa is home to just over 40,000 dollar millionaires. And then the next on the list is Egypt, which is home to about 14,800. So it's quite a big drop between South Africa and Egypt. Then the next on the list is Morocco, which is 7,500. Then Nigeria on 7,200. And then Kenya on 6,800. Nigeria used to be a lot higher. It used to be around 15,000, but it's dropped a lot. It's had a bad decade in Nigeria. So Nigeria
used to. Would it be the oil price?
Mainly the currency is depreciated very heavily against the dollar, and our figures are in dollar terms.
Yes.
I mean, they recently restated their GDP, and they halved it. But we always felt their GDP was overstated in Nigeria, because there was a stage where they said they had a higher GDP in Nigeria than South Africa, which never made much sense.
I recall that. And wasn't that because they actually included other metrics into the calculation of the GDP, such as their film industry, Nollywood,
oil? That's the problem. That's the problem with GDP and why we always say that wealth metrics are better, because GDP has a multiplier effect. For instance, if I pay you $100 and you pay someone else $100, that same $100 to someone else, that adds $200 to the GDP. So it's, even though it's only $100 that was initially generated.
So
if you include additional sectors, it can double the GDP, just an additional sector. It creates a huge multiplier effect. So I think that was probably an issue with the way they did it in Nigeria. But just the way GDP figures are collected, it is an issue.
Andrew, I like your thinking, and this is where I get very intrigued, because you're raising such an interesting point, right? And of course, you come from an economic spectrum background, and of course, within terms of data and analysis of this number. And as you say, perhaps wealth might be a better metric and report for actually how an economy is doing. On the back of what you've published then, help us contextualize, what does this mean around the performance of our economies? Especially, of course, for many of us in South Africa, we look at South Africa's GDP print. We've barely made 1% in terms of growth over the last few years versus some of our peers across the continent, the Kenyas and others on the East, you know, who are printing at least 6, 5, 7% in terms of GDP. So in the context of the wealth report. What does this tell us about how our economies are performing?
Well, wealth is driven by different things from GDP. So, for instance, the wealth in South Africa would mainly be a product of the stock exchange performance, for instance, particularly in dollar terms. So how well is the stock market performing in dollar terms?
Gotcha.
And also asset price the business property prices in dollar terms, whether they've gone up. Now, property prices haven't really gone up in dollar terms anywhere in the last decade.
Not even in our Atlantic seaboard?
Maybe slightly. I mean, places, hotspots like Amanus have had a bit of a rise. But really, remember, the last decade, the rand has halved against the dollar. So how many places have doubled in price?
Gotcha.
Not many. There are some complexes in, for instance, there's a couple of complexes that we track in Plettenberg Bay and Amanus apartment complexes that have tripled over that period in rand terms. So they've obviously gone up in dollars. But it is the exception rather than the rule.
Got you. And what about other markets like Kenya? Because that's also a prominent feature on the list, together with Morocco, as key players in terms of where a lot of dollar-based African millionaires are.
Well, Kenya's was doing quite well up until about 5 years ago, and then they had a lot of political instability around, and their currency started depreciating quite heavily against the dollar, and also a lot of wealthy people started to leave, although not as many as places like Nigeria, which lost huge numbers of wealthy people, especially to places like Dubai. So that's an ongoing struggle for a lot of countries. Even South Africa loses a lot of wealthy people to migration. Although one thing we did pick up this year is there are a lot of wealthy people coming back, especially from the UK and Europe. The UK and Europe are not as attractive to wealthy people as they used to be.
Do you know why?
They've got very high taxes. They're not as safe as they used to be, especially the UK. And places like the Western Cape, you go to a town like Amanus, it'll be safer than most places in the UK. Now, obviously, Amanus is probably the safest town in South Africa, so it's probably not necessarily a barometer, but still it tells you something.
Yeah.
And remember, South Africa, wealthy people live in their bubbles in South Africa, in these lifestyle estates, which some people say is a bad thing, some people say is a good thing. But South Africa has a very well-developed lifestyle estate sector. And most of the rich people in South Africa are increasingly living on lifestyle estates.
Got you. Is there a particular demographic, an age group that we find is either returning or that dominates, these particular individuals of significant wealth?
It's generally retired people, like people over 60.
Okay.
But remember, most high net worths are over 60,
yeah.
Especially in South Africa. So that would always be the case. It isn't necessarily entrepreneurs that are coming in, but of course, how many countries are really attracting the big entrepreneurs? There's not many.
Mm.
For instance, the billionaires in the US, they never leave the US, really, and they're obviously the big entrepreneurs. A lot of the UK entrepreneurs, they leave. They don't tend to come to South Africa. They normally go to places like the Caribbean or Singapore or Dubai. South Africa could possibly become a hub for entrepreneurs, but a lot of that would center around becoming more attractive from a taxation point of view. South Africa has quite high taxes.
Yeah. And I asked that question deliberately around age and who's coming back versus the international markets, because Dubai has become a hotspot for a lot of dollar millionaires and even rand millionaires. I know a few people who actually have residency or dual citizenship or some kind of way of actually making sure that they're able to own assets there or actually register them there, because Dubai doesn't actually have any taxes. And I'm quite intrigued to see that dynamic, you know, when it comes to not only quote-unquote dual citizenship or residency in another market, but also which markets have grown to be quite prominent for African dollar millionaires.
Well, I think Dubai has become very attractive, mainly because, I mean, you can't become a citizen of Dubai unless you're an Emirati.
Yes.
So even if you're born in Dubai, getting a Dubai a UAE passport is not an automatic thing. So Dubai is very strict around their passport. But what they do allow wealthy people is to be resident there. And that allows, and if as long as they spend over 183 days a year there, then they're tax resident in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
And So a lot of people do that, particularly in Africa.
183 days, I'm trying to do the math. It's just over
just
4 months, right?
It's just 183, so just over half the year. So you've got to spend over half the year in the place to be tax resident. So that's what those are kind of the loophole. In the old days, before the Panama Papers and
yes.
things like that, before WikiLeaks and the Panama Papers, it was different. People used to kind of, they weren't really based in any particular country. But now that the tax net is closed, the global tax net is closed, which has made it way more difficult for wealthy people. So often they have to make sure they're in a certain place for that amount of time to make sure they're tax resident.
Andrew, I am so intrigued because this obviously means that why I ask this question is because when we take a look at where we are in terms of the transition of wealth, especially intergenerationally, baby boomers are transferring a lot of their wealth now to Gen X's, millennials, and even, you know, the very lucky Gen Z's who might have super wealthy grandparents who are like, here you go. Here's a wonderful windfall and this is what I bequeath to you. And I'm quite intrigued, you know, because as you're mentioning, the older generation is coming back home, I guess, to settle and perhaps have experienced Australia, the UK and Europe and want to settle in a safe environment and a community that they're familiar with within South Africa. But what are we seeing, you know, is the younger generation obviously wants to be part of a global community. So my question is, in these differences in outcomes and options of managing their wealth, is that playing an influence on how wealth actually flows to the African continent versus other markets?
Look, I think South Africa's in a unique position, although it is considered not a particularly safe country, geopolitically, it's one of the safest countries.
Because we don't have any war.
Have any wars. There's not a lot of religious violence, particularly yes. in South Africa. Now, there's a lot of religious violence in Europe and North Africa and the Middle East, obviously.
Yes.
So we feel that South Africa could potentially benefit from that long term. But that's obviously, that's just a subject of forecast.
Got you. Andrew, I can imagine the kind of themes and trends that you must actually witness. And as you can see me asking these questions, you know, there's a lot going through in my mind as to what the outcomes will be in terms of the growth and development of dollar millionaires on the African continent. I guess there's a key takeaway just for us to bear in mind. You know, this report does take a look at the reality of where the numbers stand at the moment. We know that when it comes to the outcome or the outlook, there's so many varying parts. You mentioned geopolitics. Macroeconomic environment is also one because you mentioned currency depreciation, but also the attractiveness of markets to actually bring home those dollar millionaires, but also develop them from a local point of view. How do you see these numbers shifting, perhaps, in if they know view on an outlook? And which countries might still dominate, and if there might be generational shifts, and are there any other themes and trends that we need to be mindful of?
Well, obviously, places like India, you'd expect really strong growth from, because
yes.
They've obviously got low labor costs and a lot of entrepreneurs. It's obviously English speaking as well. Mm-hmm. Language comes into it. Because America is the dominant force in wealth, and as they say, when America sneezes, the world gets a cold.
Yeah.
They have a huge amount of power, which obviously South Africa is now having to grapple with because of political issues between the U.S. and South Africa. But South Africa is a very geopolitically very important player, I'd say, along with Australia, India, China, Brazil, Canada. It's arguably, in a way, one of the most important countries in the world, historically, in terms of trade, in terms of minerals, in terms of climate, in terms of the fact that it has a well-developed luxury residential sector. I think a lot of people who go to Europe are shocked by the prices because they compare it to here and they go, this doesn't make sense.
You know, now that you say that, yeah.
Better, it's much nicer here.
A bigger yard space, better weather,
yes.
Beautiful views. And you're quite right, because we see it, right? Atlantic seaboard, parts of Stellenbosch and other places in the Western Cape. Here in Gauteng as well, you look at Steyn City, Waterfall, you know, KZN as well, new developments that are popping up. So, I see it. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, South Africa offers great value, particularly Cape Town. Obviously, Cape Town, I think in the Daily Telegraph in the UK, they've ranked Cape Town the number one city for seven of the past 10 years in terms of visiting and living. So obviously, Johannesburg is not necessarily in that boat, but it still has a spillover effect. I think if Cape Town does well, it'll be good for Johannesburg.
100%. Andrew, there's so much more I could get into your brain about, because there's so many interesting nuances that definitely come into play here and considerations. But yeah, thank you for giving us some perspective. I clearly need to work a lot harder, right? 20 million rand in liquid assets, or at least 17, given where the current with now, let's say 18, for one to be a dollar millionaire. Not too big a task, I think. Let's see how many South Africans can get there. But at the same time, we're also well aware to the sensitivities around South Africa and the pressure that the middle class has been under, and of course, levels of inequality. But interesting insights that you've shared with us. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Andrew Amwells, Head of Research at wealth intelligence firm New World Wealth.
Kaya Biz with Gugule Tumfuphi, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.